Hello, and welcome to episode 20 of the Word Theater Short Story Podcast, your weekly access to the best short stories read by great actors. My name is Cedaring Fox, Word Theater's founder and artistic director.
And I'm Kirsty Pitt, UK founder and creative partner. Stories become Word Theater not because they're acted out, but because the actors embody the characters. They step into the story and live in the character skins. We have a delightful story to share with you today, recorded live with the author in the room at an early Word Theater event in Venice, California, and performed by an actress who is barely out of her teens and is now world-renowned.
Today you will hear Note to Sixth Grade Self by Julie Oringer, performed by Elizabeth Moss.
The recording was made years ago, so she might sound a little different than you're used to.
The story is from Julie's first published book, a collection of stories titled How to Breathe Underwater. The Guardian described her work as clear-eyed, compassionate, and deeply moving. We agree. Please welcome the author, who will introduce her story.
Hi, this is Julie Oringer. Note to Sixth Grade Self has its origins in New Orleans, where I lived when I was the protagonist's age. At my school, every sixth grader took ballroom dancing on Wednesday afternoons at a dance studio called Miggy's. Our bodies had become awkward and unpredictable. The divisions between boys and girls had never been more evident. And worst of all, the social hierarchy at school had become even more clearly delineated and more painful for anyone who wasn't at the top. Note to Sixth Grade Self allows its grown-up narrator to look back to sixth grade and give herself some advice. The story was originally read for Word Theater in 2004 by a young Elizabeth Moss, whose interpretation brought new layers of meaning to the narrative voice, and whose emotional acuity and humor infused every line. I had no idea that 13 years later I'd see Lizzie Moss star in the TV series of Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale. Watching that incredible show, an adaptation of one of my favorite novels, I always felt like I shared a secret connection with Lizzie that went back to that day in 2004. I'm so happy to present her reading to you today.
On Wednesdays, wear a skirt. A skirt is better for dancing. After school, remember not to take the bus. Go to McDonald's instead. Order the fries. Don't even bother trying to sit with Patricia and Kara. Instead, try to sit with Sasha and Tony Sue. If they won't let you, try to sit with Andrea Shaw. And if Andrea Shaw gets up and throws away the rest of her fries, rather than sit with you, sit alone and do not look at anyone, particularly not the boys. If you do not look at them, they may not notice you sitting alone. If they don't notice you sitting alone, there is still a chance that one of them will ask you to dance. At 3:30, stand outside with the others and take the number 7 bus uptown. Get off when they all get off. Be sure to do this. Do not stare out the window and lose yourself. You will end up riding out to the edge of town, past the rusted gas storage tanks, and you will never find the right bus home. Pay attention. Do not let the strap of your training bra slip out the armhole of your short-sleeved shirt. Do not leave your bag on the bus. As you cross the street, take a look at the public high school. The kids there will be eating long sticks of Roman candy and leaning on the chain-link fence. Do they look as if they care who dances with whom? Or what steps you'll learn this week? Newsflash, they do not. Try to understand that there's a world larger than the one you inhabit. If you understand that, you will be far ahead of Patricia and Kara. For now, though, you live in this world. So go ahead and follow the others across the street to Miggy's Academy of Dance. There's a low fence outside. Do not climb on it in your skirt. Huddle near the door with the other girls. See if anyone will let you listen. Do not call attention to yourself. Listen as Patricia, with her fascinating stutter, describes what she and Kara bought at the mall. Notice how the other girls lean forward as she works her way through her troublesome consonants. Guest jeans and a pre-sweater. They will talk about the TV shows they watch, who killed whom, who is sleeping with whom. They will compare starlets' hairstyles. None of this talk is of any importance. For God's sake, don't bother watching those TV shows. Keep reading your books. At 4:00, go inside with the others. Line up against the wall with the girls. Watch how the boys line up against their wall, popular ones in the middle, awkward ones at the sides. Watch how the girls jockey to stand across from the boys they like. Watch Brittany Wells fumble with the zipper of her nylon sports sack. Don't let her get next to you with that thing. Try to stand across from someone good. Do not let yourself get pushed all the way out to the sides. Across from Zachary Booth or Ben Dusseldorf. Watch how Patricia and Kara stand. Their hips shot to one side. Their arms crossed over their chests. Try shooting your hip a little to one side. You know, rest your weight on one foot. Draw a circle on the wooden floor with one toe. Do not bite your fingernails. Do not give a loud sniff. Think of the word nonchalant. Imagine the 11th graders, the way they look when they smoke on the bus. Put your eyes closed halfway. When Miss Miggy comes out, do not look at her enormous breasts. Breasts like those will never grow on your scarecrow body. Do not waste your time wanting them. Instead, watch how she moves in her low-cut green dress. Chin high, back straight, hips a sway. Listen to the way she talks. Foxtrot, cha-cha, waltz. Oh, love how she talks, but do not pick it up. When you move north in 3 years, you cannot afford to say y'all. Listen as Miss Miggy describes what y'all will learn that day. Watch how her hand traces the dance steps in the air. Now that the boys are occupied staring at her breasts, you can look openly at Eric Cassio. Admire his hair and eyes. Oh, but quickly. Like all boys, he will feel you looking. The first dance will always be a cha-cha. On the record, they will sing in Spanish, a woman trilling in the background, and it will start a thrill in your chest that will make you want to move. Watch Miss Miggy demonstrate the steps and practice the steps in your little rectangle of floor. Watch how Patricia and Kara do the steps, their eyes steady in front of them, their arms poised as if they were already holding their partners. Now concentrate on dancing. Avoid Sasha and Tony Sue with their clumsy soccer field legs. Ignore Brittany in that purse. When Miss Miggy looks at you, concentrate hard. Remember practicing with your father. Do not throw in an extra dance step that you are not supposed to know yet. Do not swish your skirt on purpose. Do not look at the boys. Long before it is time to pick partners, you will feel the tightness in your stomach. Do not let it break your concentration. You have too many things to learn. Remember, if you want to have the most gold stars at the end of the 8 weeks, you're going to have to work hard. Imagine dancing in a spotlight at the end of class ball with the best boy dancer from all the 7 private schools. On the achievement record next to your name, there are already 10 stars. Patricia and Kara also have 10 stars. Everyone else has 4 or 5. Oh, think of the stars in their plastic box. You can almost taste the adhesive on their backs. 2 more stars can be yours today if you do not let yourself get nervous. And when it is time for the boys to pick, do not bite your hangnails. Do not pull at your skirt. Watch how Patricia and Kara lean together and whisper and laugh as if they don't care whether or not they get picked. Watch how Miss Miggy brings her arms together like a parting of the Red Sea in reverse to start the picking. The boys will push off with their shoulder blades and make their way across the floor. Do not make eye contact. If you make eye contact, you will drown. And do not, whatever you do, look at Eric Cassio. You do not care which one of those other girls he picks. You know it will not be you. When the picking is over, hold your chin up and wait for Miss Miggy to notice you. Standing alone, she will take Zachary Booth by the shoulder and steer him over to you. When he is standing in front of you, look down at his white knee socks. And stand silent as he asks with his lisp if he can have this dance. Ignore the snorts and whispers of your classmates. Do not think about Zachary Booth's hand warts. Let him take your right hand and put his left hand stiffly at your waist. And be glad you're dancing with a boy at all and not with Brittany Wells as you did last week. When Miss Miggy starts the music, raise your chin and look Zachary Booth in the eye. Make sure he knows that even though he is the boy, he will be the one to lead. As much as he hates to dance with you, he will be grateful for that. It will be up to you alone to make sure you don't both look like fools. Squeeze his hand when it is time to start. Whisper the steps under your breath. When he falters, keep right on going. Let him fall back in step with you. Out of the corner of your eye, watch Miss Miggy drifting through the room as she claps the rhythm, her red mouth forming the words 1, 2. When she looks your way, remember your father's advice. Head high, shoulders back. Smile at Zachary Booth. Ignore the grimace he makes in return. If you dance well, you may be picked to demonstrate. And you know which boy will be picked. You know who is picked to demonstrate nearly every time. Who Miss McGee always wants to pick, even when she has to pick one of the others just to mix things up. Eric Cassio. Isn't that just great, in your opinion? Already the world understands how excellent he is. The music swells towards its final cha-cha-cha, and Miss Miggy's eyes scan the room. Her red lips come together like a bow. She raises her rack of breasts proudly and lifts her finger to point. The finger flies through the air toward Eric Cassio, and Miss Miggy calls his name. He scowls and looks down, pretending to be embarrassed, but there's a smile at the corner of his mouth. Patricia bites a fingernail. Understand that she is nervous. This gives you power. Do not flinch when Zachary Booth pinches your arm. Do not let the burning in your eyes become tears. He does not concern you. The only thing that concerns you is who Miss Miggy will point to next. Could be anyone. It could be you. Her finger flies through the air. Is it you? Oh, God. It is. Do not look at Patricia and Kara as they extend their tongues at you. Ignore Zachary Booth's explicit hand gesture. Forget you weigh 69 pounds. Stop wanting breasts so badly. So what if you wear glasses? So what if your skirt is not Calvin Klein? For this one moment, you have no hangnails, no bony knees. And there is a secret between you and Eric Cassio. When the others clear the floor, look him square in the eye and share that secret. The secret is, you know he likes to dance. Goes back to the day when you were punished together for being tardy, when you had to transplant all the hybrid peas from the small white plastic pots to the big terracotta ones. Your hands touched down in the bag of potting soil. When you got cold, he gave you his green sweater. Later, as you were cleaning up, the water was running, no one could hear him. He told you he liked to dance. Remember these things. The fact that he ignored you at lunch that day, at recess, and every day afterward, even the fact that he's now Patricia's boyfriend, does not matter. He likes to dance. Look into his eyes, and he will remember he told you. Let his arm come around you, tanned and slim. Take his hand, it's free of warts. The dance requires that you maintain eye contact with him almost constantly. Do not be afraid to meet his blue eyes. Smile. Remember what your father has taught you. Cuban motion is in the hips, a white boat rocking on waves. The half-hour demonstration with your mother, hair upswept, was not for nothing. Here you are. Miss Miggy lowers the arm onto the record, and the maracas shake into action. When you dance with Eric Cassio, communicate through your hands, a press here, a sharp squeeze there, and you'll know what he wants you to do, and he'll know what you want him to do. As you change directions, catch Patricia's eye for one moment. Give your hips the Cuban motion. Make her watch. When you twirl, twirl sharp. Listen to Miss Miggy clapping in rhythm. Let all the misery fall out of your chest and smile at Eric. He will smile back, just with the corner of his mouth. He is remembering transplanting the peas. He does not smile at Patricia that way. That is a smile for you. Do the special pretzel thing with your arms, that thing Miss Miggy has only shown you once. Pull it off without a hitch. And with your back arched and your leg outstretched. And listen to the silence that comes over the room like fog. Remember the way they look at you. No one will applaud. 5 seconds later, they will hate you more than ever. School this next week will be hell. You will pay a price for that moment at Miss Miggy's. When you're not looking, your illustrations of Greek myths will be torn from the classroom walls and stuffed in the trash. You will return to your seat after sharpening your pencil and sit down in a small, cold pool of glue. In gym during a field hockey game, halfback Kara's stick will come out and trip you. Try to understand what's going on. You got to dance with Eric Cassio, and he refused to act as if you made him sick. this is a threat to the social order. After school, Patricia will call you on the phone. She will tell you Kara's sorry for tripping you in gym. Look down at your purple swollen wrist. Touch the taped together bridge of your glasses. Say, it's no big deal. Patricia will ask you what you were doing that afternoon. You will whisper, nothing. She will ask you to meet her and Kara at Uptown Square. We're going shopping for dresses for the Miggy's ball, she'll say. Wanna come? Now, think. Think. Do you really believe Kara could be sorry that suddenly she and Patricia could crave your company? And even if they did, would you want these girls as friends? Try to remember who you're dealing with here. Try to tell Patricia you will not go shopping. And of course, you will not refuse. You will arrange a time and place to meet, then you will spend half an hour picking out an outfit, red Chinese print pants and a black shirt, matching shoes and earrings. You will ask your mother to drive you to the mall, and she will consent, surprise and relief plain on her face. She will even give you her credit card. At the mall, you will wait for Patricia and Kara for hours, but they will not come. The next day at recess, all the girls will gather around you as you try to swing. They'll needle you with questions. How many hours did you wait? Did you cry? Did you make believe you had a pretend friend? Did you have to call your mommy? Get out of the swing. Be careful. You are angry. And words do not come easily around your classmates, particularly not at times like these. But you cannot let them continue to think that they have made you miserable. Tell them the truth. You went to Mason Blanche and bought a blue velvet dress. Liar, you can't afford a dress from Mason Blanche. I did. No, you didn't. I think you bought a diaper, Kara finishes. It's a blue velvet dress with spaghetti straps. They don't even have a dress like that there. You never went in there, you liar. You were too busy crying. Wah! No one likes me. You bought a dirty baby diaper. You're wearing it right now. Ew, ew. Ew, ew, ew. They run away from you holding their noses and tell their friends you had to wear a diaper because you kept stinking up your pants. Back in the classroom before the teacher gets back, they push their desks into a tight little knot on the other side of the room. Finally, you understand the vocabulary word, ostracize. Look away from them. Stare at the blackboard. Swallow. Out of the corner of your eye, glance at Eric Cassio. He will be watching you. Not laughing with the others. Patricia will lean over and whisper in his ear and he will answer her, but he will not once, laugh at your expense. When the teacher comes in and asks, what on earth is going on? Everyone will start moving the desks back without a word. Soon you will all get lost in the angles and word shelves of a sentence diagram. After that math, then the bus ride home. Now you can spend all evening sulking in the alcove of your bedroom. When your parents come to tell you it's time for dinner, you will tell them you have a headache. You will cry and ask for orange children's aspirin. Half an hour later, your little brother will come to you with a plate of food, and he will sit there serious-eyed as you eat it. Later, when he's gone, you will take the white Mason Blanche bag out of your closet and steal a glance inside. The blue velvet dress is folded in white tissue and sealed with a gold sticker. And despite everything that's happened, you can still imagine dancing with Eric at the end of class ball. As you lie in bed that night, you will hear your parents in their bedroom talking about sending you to a different school. Your father is the champion of this idea. When your mother argues that things might be getting better for you, you will secretly take her side. You tell yourself that leaving the school would mean giving up, letting the others win. You will not have that. You will not go to the schools your father suggests. Newman, your rival, or Lakeside, a religious day school. You will get angry at him for mentioning it. Doesn't he believe you can prove yourself to them? Get friends? Even become popular? You blind, proud, stupid, poor dunce. Next day, you will bring the dress to school. Why? For God's sake, why? Won't they see it at the Miggy's ball anyway? But you insist on proving to them that it's real. Despite the obvious danger. You will carry it in the Mason Blanche bag to show you really bought it there. When it's time for morning recess, you will casually take the bag out of your locker as if you have to move it to put some books away. Patricia and Carol will stop at your locker on their way out. You will pretend not to see them. Notice, however, that Eric Cassio is standing in the doorway waiting for them. Look, she brought a bag of baby You're stinking up the whole place, Kara says. You pick up the bag so that the tissue inside crinkles, then steal a glance inside and smile to yourself. Is that your Kmart dress for the Miggies ball? Can I borrow it? Patricia takes the bag from you and holds it open. You feel a flash of fear, seeing it in her hands. Look at Eric Cassio, he's staring at his shoes. Patricia takes out the tissue-wrapped dress and tears the gold sticker you have kept carefully intact. As she shakes it out and holds it against herself, she and Kara laugh. Look at me! I'm Cinderella! I'm Cher! Tell her to give it back. Oh, sure! Come and get it! Patricia lofts the dress over your head in a blur of blue. Kara catches it. Don't you want it, stinky baby? Kara shakes it in your face, then throws it over your head again to Patricia. Patricia holds the dress over your head. She is 3 inches taller than you. You jump and catch the hem in one hand and hold on tight. When Patricia pulls, you pull too. Finally, she gives a sharp yank. There is a terrible sound. The sound of satin shearing, detaching itself from velvet. Patricia stumbles back with half your dress in her hands. Her mouth hangs open in a perfect O. Outside, kids shriek and laugh at recess. A kickball smacks against the classroom wall. Kara will be the first to recover. She will take the half dress from Patricia and shrug. Oh well, she says. It was just an ugly dress. Yeah, Patricia says, her voice flat and dry. And a stupid brand. Kara will throw the piece of dress at you. Let it fall at your feet. Suppress the wail of rage inside your ribcage. Do not look at Eric Cassio. Do not move or speak. Just wait for them to leave. When the classroom door closes behind them, sit on the floor and stuff the rags of your dress back into the paper bag. Stare at the floor tile. Black grains swirling into white. Let's see if you can make it through the next 5 minutes. The next 10. Eventually you'll hear the class coming back from recess. Get to your feet and dust off your legs. Sit down at your desk and hold the bag in your lap. You will remember a story you heard on the news about a brother and sister in Burma who got caught in a flood. As they watched from a rooftop, the flood stripped their house of its walls, drowned their parents against a bamboo fence, and washed their goats and chickens down the road. Their house is gone. Their family is gone. But they hold on to a piece of wood and kick toward dry land. Think how they must have felt that night, kicking into the flood. The houses all around them in splinters. People and animals dead. On Saturday, wear something good. A pair of white shorts and a red halter and sandals. Put your hair in a beret. Try not to think about the dress in its bag at the bottom of your closet. That does not concern you. Go downstairs and get something to eat. You will not erase yourself by foregoing meals. After breakfast, when your mother asks you if you'd like to make cookies, say yes. Look how much this pleases her. You've not felt like doing anything in weeks. Take out the measuring cups and bowls and all the ingredients. Mix the dough. Allow your brother to add the chocolate chips. Put the cookies in the oven. Check them at 3 minutes and at 5. Your brother claps his hands and asks again and again if they are ready yet. When they are ready, open the oven door. A wash of sugary heat will hit your face. Pull on the mitts and take out the cookie sheet. Just then, the doorbell will ring. Listen as your mother gets the door. You will hear her talking to someone outside, low. Then she'll come into the kitchen. There's a boy here for you, she says, twisting her hands in her apron. He wants to ride bikes. Who? I don't know. He's blonde. Do not drop the tray of cookies on the kitchen tile. Oh, do not allow your head to float away from your body. familiar tightness will gather in your throat. At first you'll think it is another joke, that when you go to the door, he will not be there. But then there he is, in the doorway of the kitchen. It's the first time in years someone else your age has stood inside your house. And this is Eric Cassier, in his blue striped Oxford shirt and khaki shorts, his hair wild from the wind. Watch him stare at your brother who's gotten a handful of cookie dough. Try talking. Offer him a cookie and milk. Your mother will take your brother silently out into the yard, and in a few moments you will hear him shrieking as he leaps through the sprinkler. Now, eat a cookie and drink milk with Eric Cassio. Do not let crumbs cling to your red halter. Wipe the line of milk from your upper lip. Watch Eric eat one cookie, then another. When he's finished, he will take a rumpled white package from his backpack and push it across the table. You will be extremely skeptical. You will look at the package as if it were a bomb. I told my mom what happened at school, he says. She got you this. Turn the package over. It is a clothing bag. When you open it, you will find a dress inside. A different one. Dark red, with a jewel neckline, and two small rosettes at the hip. I know it's not the same as the other one, he says. Look at him hard, to make sure this is not a joke. But his eyes are steady, clear. Stand up and hold the dress up against you. You can see it is just the right size. And bite your lip. Look at Eric Cassio, speechless. Try to smile instead. He will understand. Patricia won the Miggies thing, he says. She told me last night. And for a moment, you will feel bludgeoned. You thought it would be you. You and Eric Cassio. It was supposed to make all the difference. Patricia couldn't possibly have more stars than you. Then remember, there's another important thing to ask him. Who's the boy? He looks down into his lap. You understand that the boy is him. And when he raises his eyes, his expression tells you that despite the dress, despite the hybrid peas, things are not going to change at school or at Miss Miggy's. He will not take walks with you at recess or sit next to you at McDonald's. And you can see he is apologizing for this. And you can choose to accept or not. Get to your feet and pull yourself up straight. Raise your chin as your mother has shown you to do. Adjust the straps of your sandals. Make sure your halter is tied tight. And then ride bikes with Eric Cassio until dark.
We hope you have enjoyed listening to Elizabeth Moss reading Julie Oringer's Note to Sixth Grade Self from her collection How to Breathe Underwater, published by Vintage. Did you know you can support two nonprofits by heading over to bookshop.org and picking up some of Julie's books? And by the way, if you're having fun listening to our podcast, please write us a review and tell your friends. Visit our website at wordtheater.org, check out our upcoming event schedule, and see how you can become a Word Theater member. Our next live stream takes place on Father's Day in the States, June 20th. We'll have Ed Harris performing a Pushcart Prize-winning story by Richard Bausch, and it'll be followed by a Q&A with Richard and Ed. All of these live streams are included with an annual membership, so please join us.
And as always, thank you to Jonathan Sachs, who composed our theme music, and to Joseph Cho, our technical director. This is Kirsty Peart in England.
And I'm Cedaring Fox in Los Angeles. Until next week, signing off.